Very good. There's been a delay getting the recording started. Jack, thank you for your hard work there. Let's get right into it. Obviously, the spider is in a very severe reaction mode. You know, you don't want to say panic mode. We've actually been prepared for a decline into March, although obviously this has been worse than we would have expected. But we're at that sort of key 260 area. We're very near it. If we can rally back above it, that could be a low for a bounce. But again, remember, we feel that any low we make in here should be retested. A bounce off a low should last a week or so. The way to look at it is, in terms of today's trading, is the low that we've made so far should hold after 10:30. In other words, if the market is holding the low of the day, and we are so far, as of 10:30, we've probably stabilized for at least the day, and we'll probably, I think we'll start the rally that we're looking at from here. Where will that rally go? We have a number as high as 300, and then we think you could see a retest of sorts coming into the end of the month. You know, the real question of what to do here is, you know, it's sort of at this point is depending a bit on client relations. Personally, I don't think I would sell much here. I don't know whether I would buy a lot. I would be looking for the market to rally. If we can rally up to the 290, the 300 area, I might very well want to sell something there if there was something I wanted to get rid of. One of the benchmarks I'm looking for also for a low in this market is the performance of Apple. Apple does have downside targets of 240 to 230. We're fairly close to there. And again, you saw in the chart book today, basically, you know, some of these things on the weekly stochastic, some of the good stocks are just coming down into oversold. We're going to have to run our accumulation models here. This week should be a bad week for the accumulation models. But again, you don't know till you run them. Those models are complex enough that you just we have to see the numbers. I'm going to move on to bonds for a minute. Bonds have actually had a few down days in here, and actually, I talked to someone last night. This is a concern. If bonds were bought on margin here, T-bonds, a drop in bonds could actually cause forced selling in bonds and stocks. So in other words, bonds may not have turned out to be the best hedge that we've seen. We'll just have to see how that goes. We're not big bond players, and we've had some questions on LQD. Our short idea below 129 has turned out pretty well. If you're in these LQDs, if you have shorted them, this is probably the time to cover at least half of that position. Tim, if you're on the call, that's turned out to be a good trade. We would cover half of that. We would look at the possibility of 113 to 112, where we would cover some more, but that's been a great hedge as it's turned out, and we want to not give that profit back if the market and everything turns quickly. In terms of the T-bonds, obviously up again a little bit today, but we're not huge on those. We still think that this has been a little bit of flight to quality. When we look at the daily TLT chart, it looks like a panic buy Prussian helmet chart. We can still see this TLT going back to 140 to 145 by the end of the year. And we're still actually expecting a fairly decent year in stock prices. We've had some questions on dividend sustainability and energy. That, unfortunately, is outside of my bailiwick. We've had some questions on airlines. You know, right now, let's take a quick look at Delta for everybody. Surprisingly, I don't think Delta was in the chart book last night. I think people have pretty much assumed that these are going to be down. The low of 2016, around 34, would be a reasonable buy point to buy some of that stock. But again, we are not really interested in taking full positions here at this time. Just as we've been saying over the last few weeks, we believe any tradable low is going to be retested, and we want to see how the retest looks when that occurs. Let me go back to oil here just for a minute, then I'm going to open the call up to Jeff. Jeff talks to a lot more people than I did, although I was out in the field the last couple of days and had some interesting discussions. The main thing is, if we look at crude oil and we look at the monthly Fed's price oscillator, it looks to us like if we close at 29 to 30 at the end of the month, that will actually put our Fred's price oscillator in the first buy we've had on oil in a year or so. We're sort of looking at the seasonals. Obviously, seasonal tendencies in oil have been down. I think the fundamental news with Russia and Saudi Arabia has trumped that to an extent. But we will still have a down Fred's price oscillator and in buy position right around, if we're right around 29 to 31 at the end of the month. Jeff, if you've got any questions for us, I'm going to let you go. Probably my pontifications aren't as valuable as the discussion that we hear from people today and my response to your question.
Hey, Jeff. First question is on LQD. Let's take a look at that. This thing. There's a big dislocation going on in the bond market right now, which might be a bigger problem than the stock market. So I want you to weigh in and give some levels on where you think LQD could go to first.
Well, I'm looking at 117, which we're about at, and 112. And then if LQD gets really nutty, back to, 112 would be my number. In other words, the break of 129 that we had talked about seems to have worked. I don't think it's going to go much lower than this, 112.
Yeah, that would take us back down to the fall of 2018 and just kind of remove the whole move that we've had to the upside. So let's look at another one. Let's look at TFI next. It's a muni one. It's a muni bond ETF. In the same. So what do you
think? And
that
would be probably 46.50 or so. And, Jeff, I want to put something into perspective on at least municipal bonds here, because I know these numbers from Merrill Lynch days back in 2008, and they haven't changed since then. One of the questions that we had been asked back in 2008 when Meredith Whitney came out with her prediction that 30% of the municipalities in the United States were going to go bankrupt, Rich Bernstein did a study back then. I don't have the study, but I remember the results. And the result was, in the Great Depression in the United States from 29 to 32, no municipal bonds went bankrupt. Some of them ended up delaying their payouts and delaying maturity, but all of that money came back to bondholders. Okay? And that was what we put out in response to Meredith Whitney's commentary. And that comment pretty much, I think, destroyed the career of Meredith Whitney, the former bond guru in that area. The other statistic that's quite interesting, Jeff, I went back and I looked at this a couple of years after 1998. When the Fed took over all of long-term capital management's bonds, to stop the first Asian crisis in 98-99. None of those bonds ended up defaulting. All of those bonds, which were Russian government bonds and some other types of bonds, those bonds basically all matured and left the Fed's balance sheets. These periods of stress in bonds very often last for a while, but in the last, certainly since the 50s and probably since the 20s, have never resulted in wholesale bond default. So, I think if you see some attractive interest rates out there, Advisors ought to look at those now that these corporates and things are coming down. Frankly, in some respects, I'm a little more interested in that than treasury bonds, because a lot of companies are going to be able to pay off their bonds, and golly knows with the federal deficit where it is and all this other stuff, will all the U.S. government bonds pay off? Who knows? Governments have defaulted more on these things than especially blue chip corporate bonds in the last few years. We've seen none, but you know, certainly really good blue chip bonds are safe. So that's where I am on that. It's been a great trade. I want to start to exit it.
Okay, what about XLU and IYR? I mean, these are also high dividend things, and they're doing exactly what LQD and TFI are doing.
Yeah, Jeff, what I think has been going on here, I mean, we'll have to take a look at it. And again, we have to realize that all stocks, regardless of what they are now, are under pressure. XLU, I think one of the reasons it's been up in the risk-on period we saw in 2019 is institutions are buying these for income and starting to segue out of bonds. So I would actually look at utilities as an area to put some money in here if you need income for clients. Utilities on XLU, right down near 50 support. You do have a brand new monthly sell signal that's about halfway down, but this is probably a pretty good area to put some money if you're putting money in. And what was your other symbol, Jeff? And again, I'm looking at monthly charts here. Other symbol?
IYR.
IYR. Yeah, real estate to me, you know, it's been, you know, we're overweight that sector. You know, ideally we would have been overweight no sectors coming into this. But IYR is also an area of interest. If you look at the long-term charts, it's down near support at 72, and the long-term trends on these aren't bad. So this compared to something like energy is a much better bet. And again, Jeff, I keep getting the question. I mean, certainly when I was in Florida, the biggest question we got was, most frequently was, when can we buy energy? And the short answer to that is XLE is just not giving any signs of a bottom here. I mean, it's just not giving on the models, on anything. The only thing you can say is it's oversold. So I'm afraid that we're gonna have to essentially just avoid that sector.
You know, Fred, I think that's, let me give you some thoughts from Phil's stuff. I ran a screen yesterday or the day before. I can't remember now. All these days are blending together. But there are 301 stocks that are in Phil's database for energy. And basically, he covers everything. And 141 of them are below $5 in price. So effectively, you know, almost half of the stocks in energy are now basically penny stocks. And that's an unbelievable statement to make. And you can look at certain stocks that, you know, had, like, look at Chesapeake. I think it's trading at 10 or 11 cents now. I mean, basically Exxon could buy the entire, all those 141 companies for nothing because their market caps have deteriorated so badly. You know, you could look at Neighbors. That's trading now at 36 cents. And you could look at Noble. That's trading at 25 cents. I mean, these are legitimate, great, you know, former energy plays for a long, long period of time. They fall apart. So I think you're absolutely right on that. I mean, the real question comes for you, Fred, on USO. What if it gets a bounce? Could it go back up to? And there is some talk potentially now about the Russians and the Saudis getting together and saying we need a do-over and maybe fix their problem. So what's your thought on
where? Yeah, USO bouncing to 9 to 10 from here fairly easily.
Okay. You've got that huge gap to fill, basically, right?
Basic gap to fill, and they'll probably stop there under normal technical circumstances. And, Jeff, let me add just a little tiny bit of color here. We spoke to our friend Dennis that we spoke to back in 2015 about the MLPs. If any longtime subscribers remember that call, even though MLPs were down, one of my good friends is one of the top MLP lawyers in Houston, and he was kind enough to come on our call And I just spoke to him a couple of days ago about this energy and these MLPs up for obvious reasons. I'm getting questions on them. Dennis is an expert that I know. And what Dennis said is this really, you know, the way that these companies will deal with this is cancel CapEx and some operations. But as far as he's concerned, there's no real big change in the business for MLPs, for example. Oil's going to keep flowing through the pipelines. And so on. He says upstream companies will have a little bit more trouble, but they've been having trouble for a while. So, Dennis, I mean, the real Jeff, the real question is the entire energy sector going to go away? And my answer to that is, who knows, but I don't think so. I don't think the demand for oil is going to go to zero right away. So, you know, we'll just have to see how that goes. And I noticed Carl Icahn, for example, bought a 10% position in Occidental. I think you're starting to see some of that stuff. The only thing I would say is, Jeff, we've got to pick our companies. Certainly, and again, the way the firms work, Jeff, they're not going to be able to change their ratings quickly enough. I happen to think Chevron is going to hold 75, 76 supports. That remains my favorite of the big oils. Heavens knows it's almost been cut in half in this. But that's the one that I would look at to buy if I were going to buy any of them. I'm not sure still why ExxonMobil is down as much and the chart looks as much worse as it does as Chevron. But the verdict is clear. It looks terrible relative to Chevron. So got to avoid that one.
So going from energy to technology. So up until basically this week, the QQQ and XLK, which I'll just use those two for the time being. Obviously, QQQ has biotech and some other stuff in it. They're now down like, you know, call it mid-20s. Like they've almost caught up to the S&P this week. And one thing that Phil uses, which is pretty comparable to like a 250-day moving average, is this monthly DMA channel. And that was the only index that hadn't broken its monthly DMA channel. And with today's intraday action, it finally did that. So do you think that we've got the possibility for a bottom in tech now setting up?
Yeah, I do. Jeff, that is certainly one area that I would be – if I were going to be buying stocks in here, I would be taking baseline positions in tech. I think a lot of our clients already have baseline positions in tech. The real question is, when do we add to it? And, you know, if you've got attractive, you know, prices on some of your holdings and you want to put, say, a third of the money that we've held out, and, Jeff, I've talked to a number of our clients. Most of them have 30% cash or so, which is fairly high for people in our business, in my end of the business. You know, I would not be adverse to putting some of that money in here if the market says I'm bottoming and is going to rally. But I can't emphasize this enough. I feel like an idiot saying this over and over again. I was going to write Jack a note last night to put in the chart book that said this, but I think everyone knows I'm saying it, is with the kind of momentum we have on the downside, the probability of some sort of a retest is, Jeff, you don't want to give probabilities, but I would say 90 to 100%. Okay? So I'm just not in a hurry. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Everyone needs to remember that.
One last question, which is kind of a probabilities question. So we're now down like roughly, let's just say it's 25%. 87, we lost 31%. Mohammed El Arian, who I consider to be a pretty bright guy, he's in that 30% level right now. Spanish flu, we lost 25%. So we've now kind of hit that number as well, with not having, you know, 675,000 deaths. Clearly, this has evolved into a, number one, a panic, and number two, I don't care if you like Trump or you don't like Trump, but this is a crisis of confidence in the leadership of Trump, as well as the Senate and the House. And, like, that's potentially maybe the only way we're getting out of this. It has nothing to do with the Fed. So Fred, if those numbers, do you think that 30% number is potentially there? I mean, look, you went on record a long time ago saying 2,200. So 2,200 from here is basically 350 points or 13%. So why not take an approach if you're really aggressive of like going a third back into stocks? In a worst case scenario, you're down 13%. But then when you get to 2,200, you can average down. And it could be 25% or 15 or whatever the number is, but make it a small thing because we could bounce from here, and then you have a nice little, you know, profit. But you could always average down to 2,200, and you'd cut your loss from like 13 to 6.5. So is that a potentially a doable strategy for people?
I think it is, depending on your cash levels. You know, with these sorts of panic moves, some of the strangest stuff happens, okay? And, Jeff, I think you're right. This is an FDR moment, actually, where the only thing we really have to fear is fear itself, right? Mm-hmm. You know, with the amount of deaths and infections in the United States still being relatively low and with very high awareness, there's a good chance that we will avoid a lot of the really horrible effects that have happened, say, in China and Italy. Okay. I've spoken to some CDC people, and because one of the nice things about being from Atlanta is, unless you're a total social misfit, you know some CDC people. Okay. And what all of them have said basically is, because the amount of kits for testing has been low, as those kits become available, we're going to see more people with coronavirus. There are going to be more people that test positive. That may not even be the amount of infections going up as much as just more people being tested for it, because we've been traveling to Italy, we've been traveling to China, so on and so forth. But the one thing apparently we do have a fairly good handle on is the amount of deaths. So it's very possible that we see the death rate go down. We know that. So that's the first thing that they say. And the second thing that they say, I actually got a list from a friend of mine at CDC, and I'll just tell you guys a couple things that are on it. The first one is heat. The virus is not heat resistant and will be killed by a temperature of just 26 to 27 degrees centigrade, which translates into the 85 to 90 area, which most of the United States experiences in the summer. The sun kills the virus in a lot of cases, and drinking warm water and plenty of water is preventative. So, and as far as the symptoms go, I finally got a list of symptoms that make sense, okay? Because one of the things I think that's made it so different here is no one even knew what the symptoms of this were. They were not publishing that. If you have a bad sore throat for 3 or 4 days and then you get real nasal, you know, congestion type stuff, 5 or 6 days later, you may have it, okay? And, you know, so when you see this and you think we are coming into summer, it's probably going to abate even if it comes back in the fall. The other thing that this friend of mine mentioned to me was they will probably fast-track any trials for a vaccine. So it's not like they're going to come out with a vaccine and say we have to test it for a couple of years and then you're going to have a vaccine. It'll be fast-tracked in some way. So,
hey,
from
Fred,
my
let me stop you right. Let me stop you right there on that point. So, one of my really good friends from high school, Dan O'Day, Jack knows his brother Brian. He is now the head of Gilead, and I know and they've already said this too, so it's not like it's inside information. But I've talked to his brother a bunch in the last couple weeks on this stuff. But they're injecting a vaccine into people in Washington. They're already doing it. Just hasn't gotten much publicity. So to your point, that's being done as we speak.
Yeah. Yeah. So and Jeff, like all panicky things, as we get more knowledge, some of that fear will go away. I mean, until recently I didn't really have and by recently I mean in the last couple of days, I didn't really have something reliable, I felt, that discussed what the symptoms and stuff actually were, right? And I think a lot of people don't have that, right? And as we get that, I think some of this fear will abate. My guess is, again, and bear in mind, I'm a complete technician here. We're within the zone of a bounce, a retest, and then we'll see, I think, a fairly decent close to the year. Jeff, we should open this for questions. We're just talking to each other. We can do that at any time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Let's open the questions.
I just looked
at the clock, and I can stay on till 11:15 easy. So questions from the field, anything that we can comment on? Star 6 to unmute.
Talk about IYT, Fred.
Yeah, I'm obviously this has done much worse than I would have thought that it did. In terms of support on IYT, you've got fairly good support right in here down to 126 to 120. And some basing action should take it back up to 160 and then a retest. And obviously, this sort of surprise pretty much negates the accumulation models. Those models started to look worse than the S&P a week ago, but not that much worse. In other words, last Friday's, I have a feeling they'll look worse this Friday. That's probably not going to be a great trade, although at this point, I'd stick with it and see what we can do in terms of getting rid of whatever it is we have. And one of my clients, by the way, Michael, did mention on the back end, if the economy picks up, there's an awful lot of transportation and goods and stuff that need to be transported. So there you are. We'll have to see how that goes. Other questions?
Fred?
Yes, sir.
Fred, if you were trying to get a rally in energy, it's not a very big position, what would you kind of target to sell at if there was, you know, like Jeff mentioned, if Saudi and Russia comes to an agreement, or what's kind of the upside level to get out?
You know, XLE at 45 would be the way that I would do it, and that would be a substantial move from here. That would be a 50% move up.
Okay.
And there's a gap 43 to 45.
Okay. Thanks, Fred.
And Steve, one of the things I think we all have to remember is that XLE has been in a downtrend in a bad chart long before the Saudi and Russian news. So I would actually use a rally to lighten up in energy and move that money to somewhere else.
Where would you move it?
You know, I'd move it to tech or real estate or utilities, probably, and be looking at industrials. But really almost, you know, Steve, I don't know why the energy stocks look as terrible as they do. All I know is that they look terrible.
Yeah. Luckily, it's only 2.5% of my portfolio.
Right. But it's still painful, and you hate to, you know, you have to see a stock that's down like that, you know, on statements. And the real, and Steve, the question that's germane that you asked is, if it's going to underperform, where do we go? I'm looking at the financials here and thinking that you're going to start to see some better actions in XLF as well, but we'll have to see how that goes.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Hey, Fred, it's Paul.
Fred.
Paul. Paul first. Paul.
Hey, how are you?
I am well. How are you?
Good. The daily on Lear, LEA, looks like it did in 18. Wanted your comments on that.
The daily chart on LEA. Yeah, it's definitely down, and you're definitely above 96. That would be worthwhile and should hit 110 to 120, and then we'll have to look at it. Some of these things could be false breakdowns. If you look at the break of support that we've had on the weeklies over the last few days, if they start to go above that, you could see a reaction to the upside.
One more, if you would. CC.
CC. Now, that's a company I've never seen before. Again, very oversold, back above 13 would be a false bottom, false breakdown in that that could take it to 24.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. And we should be, by the way, looking for false breakdowns and things. Okay, if the market's going to reverse, you're going to see a bunch of false breakdowns where they snap back fairly quickly and then rally.
Yeah, CC was a spinoff of the Dow DuPont.
Huh, okay. I don't know that company. That's interesting.
Thanks so much.
Sure.
Going to ask, you said if it held the low at 7:30 today or 10:30 your time?
Yes.
So it did? So
that
what does that mean
the
now
low
for
the day,
day
that
or?
Low.
You think that will be? We won't.
Yeah.
We won't break it.
Yeah, that would be
great.
The first thing. And the second thing I would say is if the spider can make it back above 260 and close there by the end of the day, that 260 area we were looking at would hold, and we could actually be up Friday and up into next week. In other words, that could be the signal for this rally that we're looking at.
Great. Thank you.
Got it.
Fred, it's Joseph.
Joseph, how are you?
Doing okay. You may have covered this earlier. I was on a call. Can you just talk a little bit about what's going on in the bond market, specifically in some of the bond ETFs, whether the taxable municipals or the tax-free municipal ETFs or closed-end funds?
Sure, Joseph. We talked about that a little bit. LQD has already come off the low where we were talking about covering some of the short position, but basically we were looking for those to start to come down if they broke 129 on LQD. And we were looking at, we actually talked this morning about covering some at 117. We'd cover it here and we'd cover it 116. Our feeling was these rates were artificially low due to flight to quality type buying in all sorts of interest rate instruments. And so we're seeing that readjust. Joseph, there was one thing that we worried about a little bit, or at least mentioned, with treasuries. This wouldn't affect corporates, but it would affect treasuries, is if some of the panic buying in the treasuries was done to hedge stocks and was done on margin and TLT starts to come down, that could be a problem. And if you look at the weekly chart of TLT, that is a beautiful Prussian helmet formation. The Prussian helmet is sort of a top with an objective back at 140 to 145, like we said. You know, at this
okay.
Value.
So, right. I was looking at things like BBN and NBB, for example, which
NBD,
are down.
NBD, let's have a look.
Yeah.
That is the same sort of pattern. And the real question is, and Joseph, one of the things we mentioned, and I'll call you separately on this because you obviously got on the call late, but even in the Great Depression, there were no real defaults on municipals. So, you know, I think a lot of these are moving around with money flow and consternation and panic rather than actual fundamental movement or even really technical movement.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And Joseph, and the bottom line there, Joseph, is I think if you sit through this and just hold them as investment positions, you're probably going to end up coming out just fine.
Okay, thanks.
And that really, I would be very, very surprised to see any of these things get in really horrible trouble.
Thanks.
Sure. And Joseph, I will call you sometime this afternoon.
Okay, I'll be here.
Good. Yeah, very few brokers are taking vacation now, as a matter of fact. Everyone I've called has pretty much been there but not available. Other questions?
Hey, Fred, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you?
Hey, good, good. What about the biotechs, just like XBI?
Those are certainly good areas, I think, to look at and buy in for a couple of reasons. The biggest reason is unless some sort of weird political miracle occurs, it sure looks like Biden is going to get the nomination to run against Trump, not Sanders. And the concern that I've had about healthcare and biotech all along was that Sanders was going to do really, really well, and because of that, we might see something happen with drug prices and things like that, with price fixing and whatever. That looks unlikely to me. And the technicals on XBI is that's right in support here between 70 and 74, say 75 and 65 at an extreme. And the weekly stochastics are coming down. They're not completely oversold yet on my machine. But that's an area I would look at. To Jeff Garbaz's point, stocks like Gilead look like their bases and look playable. I think XBI looks better than IBB, but both are looking decent.
All right. Well, thank you.
Sure. Good to hear your voice. Other questions? Jeff, any more questions from you?
Yeah. Brad, I do. You ready?
Yes. Yes, I'm here.
Okay. So when I looked at the S&P 500 names on Phil's volume swing, which is basically like a money flow type of indicator, first of all, it's interesting. It was incredible. I've never seen this ever. There are only like 16 stocks yesterday that had a positive score on them. But some of the names that were up at the top of the list were really pretty interesting names. So I thought I'd have you just quickly go through a couple of those charts and weigh in, because it's nice to actually in this period to be able to find some of those names that actually look good, and they were good looking charts.
Sure.
And obviously last night when you looked at the chart book, almost everything was really pretty ugly. But these are quantitatively done, and it shows that people are actually buying these names and not giving up. So the first one is one of the names we've already talked about, Gilead. So GILD. So quick thought there.
Yeah, that to me is viable here and should hold 63 to 66 support pretty easily. And it's basically a long base. Much above 78 would imply a nice move to the upside. It's bounced right off that
next
resistance.
One is,
go.
Okay, great. REGN? Regeneron?
Yeah, Regeneron. That also has traded up to resistance at 500, and it's on a monthly buy still, and above that 500 would target 600 or so. That's a nice-looking chart.
Okay, next one is Clorox, CLX.
That's still a nice uptrend. I could buy that right here and look for support at 150 to hold and a target of 180.
Okay. Next one, which is kind of an interesting one because, some people here are obviously looking for energy, and this it's an awesome-looking chart, and it really hasn't fallen apart, and that is Cabot Oil and Gas, which is COG. Thoughts there? And where would you put a stop on it?
I put a stop on Cabot. Yeah, I'm looking at it here, Jeff. Stopping on it, say 12.95, give it some room for volatility, and an upward price target of 22 to 24.
Okay, great. That's awesome. Let me just see what else. Oh, Citrix, CTXS.
Yeah, I've had some questions about this from some other people. I think your stop has to be below, say, 91 and upside target of 125, and it probably won't go much below 100.
Okay. Kroger?
Yeah, that's one that looks pretty decent. If it can get through the resistance, which is currently right at the high for this week at, say, 33.34, you've probably got a $41, $42 target, and support at 24 should hold.
Great. And then two more. It's just nice to be able to give people some ideas that are actually
yeah, no, that makes
kind of
good
okay
sense.
Here.
Yeah.
SBAC, SBA Communications.
That's also a nice chart, Jeff. You've got that resistance up in the 309 area, and the maximum, well, a stop below, say, 223, and that's also holding up pretty well. And I like that because that's sort of a non-emotion stock here. It's not going to be affected too much, I think, by a snap cure for the virus or whatever.
The last notable one that's a positive one is AMD, which is pretty amazing. It's really hung in extremely well.
You're right on support there, Jeff. Realistically, this could get down to 35. I'd use a stop below 35, but it has held in pretty well. And your upside target on it is probably 53.
Okay. And then just one more, which showed up a couple days ago and stuff, and it looks like it's got a nice base here now, is AutoZone, AZO.
Yeah. An old Jim Parker stock. Your real support on that, if it has trouble, is 819, and there's shorter-term support at 970, and if this can go back to, certainly, I think, back to 1,200.
You could get a bounce right back up to where it was. Okay,
yeah.
Cool. So key, obviously, is it holding in, you know, above 1,000, right?
Right.
So would you be okay if you just tried to trade it and it didn't work and it got below 1,000? Then you'd be like, I'm out for the time being. And then it came back above, tried
again.
Yeah, I think
that's a decent strategy.
Okay. Okay, great. That's it for me. Nothing else.
Very good. Yeah, and Jeff, if you want to send me that list, maybe we'll take a look at some of those for the weekly to put in chart of interest.
Yeah, what I'll do is I'll send it to you after on Saturday so we get the full
perfect. Yeah,
week,
so we see what's actually there and not what changes, because there's been a lot of change on a daily basis here. This has been really hard to analyze, guys. I hope at least we had the direction right coming into March and most people had some good cash positions. Obviously, I wish I'd figured out that this was going to do this ahead of time, but I don't know whether anyone was able to do that. So,
hi, Fred. It's Justin.
Other questions?
Hi, Fred. It's Justin.
Justin, how are
Fred,
you?
Fred, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
I'm doing good. Good morning. Yes. Hey, great call. I got a question on that SPY when you were. So right now, SPY, you got the daily oversold.
Right.
You got the weekly. Weekly's almost oversold, right? Or would you consider it oversold here?
The weekly is basically, let me take a quick look, but the weekly now is basically oversold.
Okay. And the monthly is getting close, right? Or would you consider that oversold here too?
The monthly that I'm looking at on the Spider is down but not yet oversold. We're down to where I thought we could get to, i.e. where it turned up in December of 18.
Yes.
But for this to recycle, it would be more downside or time.
Okay. Or time. Now, on the rally back up, are you looking for when the weekly gets oversold, you'd like to see the SPY between 290 and 300? Was that what you were saying?
Well, when the weekly turns up, it can turn up from here, and a rally back ought to get this thing back up to 290 to 300. That would bring the weekly up a bit, and then the weekly stochastic would double bottom on a retest.
Okay, gotcha.
Those double bottoms on the weekly very often hold. For example, if you look back at 218, 219, we had a slightly lower low, but the next weekly buy signal led to a multi-month rally.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
And with this, and that's a good point, Justin. With this kind of momentum, you're probably going to see that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Thanks, Fred. Have a great day.
Got it. You too. Enjoy Santa Barbara. Other questions? Very well. Going once.
Hey, Fred. It's Barrett in Atlanta. Hope you're doing well.
Barrett, fine. How are you?
Good, man. Trying to keep my powder dusty and dry.
Yeah.
I just wanted to see if you had comments on just the breakdown of SPHD.
You know, I don't know why that has done so badly. And the problem with this ETF is, unlike SPLV, it only rebalances twice a year, sort of like USMV does.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So from my perspective, you know, I would buy that for yield. It has done pretty well overall as far as yield goes, but I am very surprised at the breakdown.
I look at that compared to SPLV, which is the same low volatility factor without a dividend. Worry about dividends and
without a dividend. There's one other difference with SPLV that it has turned out, I think, to be important, and in really bad down moves is important, and that is USMV has sector, or sorry, USMV and SPHD do have sector guardrails. You can only be 25% of a sector in SPHD. SPLV doesn't have sector guardrails and rebalances four times a year. That's the difference, and that, I think, in really bad downturns is helpful.
Yeah, you just load up on staples and such. So, you know, we were on the Stephen Stuttmeyer call and on yesterday, and he outlined there looking at a few sectors that are worth trying here, and that's staples, discretionary, and telecom services. And what do you say about those three? I know there's traditional defensive sectors, but what do you feel about that right
now?
Well,
the only problem I have with XLY is it's a lot of Amazon.
Yeah.
But given that, Amazon is trading okay. And so I could do that one. I prefer XLP to XLY. The accumulation model on that has been better for a while, and I think that one is trading better. And what was the third one? Was it XLB as in Bimbo?
No. Pimple. Paul. XL. Yeah, P.
Right. And again, for those people at Merrill Lynch, we have a long-running joke on the military call signs. You know, IYT Telecom or XLP Communications.
Sorry, XLP is Staples.
Right. Yeah, are both probably decent ideas, XLC, to try here, and that is near support.
Okay.
You know, and certainly for telecom and communications, I like IYT, which has held up pretty well and is basically AT&T and Verizon, and those stocks have held up pretty well.
Yeah,
and have great
that's right.
Yield.
Last one, you know, or two other questions. One, general market. So you're looking at what support levels, if you needed to use some of that dry powder up right now, where would you put it?
If we close above 260 today, I would put money in and look for 290 to 300.
Wow. Okay. And then on the downside, where are we headed if we don't do that?
220 to 200.
Okay. Thank you.
I would be really surprised to see it go below 220. But honestly, Barrett, I'm surprised to see it here also.
Yeah, I think we all are. And that's the thing. I don't think anybody's bearish really enough. I mean, sentiment.
Well,
is definitely
let's talk
there,
about but just briefly that. Okay.
Yeah.
Which we mentioned in the weekly, but we did not, or in the midweek, but sort of glossed over it because I got the numbers really, really late at night on Tuesday, which doesn't normally happen. Normally, I'd be getting those numbers on Wednesday after the call. Percent bears took a nice jump from 20% bears to 24% bears, basically. In really severe declines, as we saw in the charts that I published in the weekly, a moving average of that number gets up to 40. That
right.
suggests that those people aren't nearly bearish enough. Okay. Now, obviously, part of the question there is, you know, everyone, I think, was surprised by this movement, Barrett. I don't think anyone, unless they were a big Elliott Wave person and had been waiting for a panic crash for the last 15 years, was not expecting this. Okay.
Right.
And, you know, so the real question is, if the news gets better on oil, and according to Jeff Garbaz and some of the things he's hearing, it could, and we start getting more of a handle on coronavirus in terms of what it is, what it does, and so on and so forth, as opposed to just blind fear of coronavirus.
Yeah.
You know, I think we'll be in better shape there as well. And that should be the first part of the bottom. And then, of course, Barrett, as you know, there's going to be a number of retail people here that say, just like Ken Lewis said back in 2008 when he bought Merrill Lynch, he said, I'm having a lot more fun with Merrill Lynch than I thought I was going to have, right?
Yeah.
In other words, a lot of people are going to abandon the stock market after this.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, that's why you get up to 40%. You abandon the
yeah,
the
you
non-
pretty much say it's going to be bearish for a long, long time, and
yeah.
out you go. Now, let's ask a question here. And, again, I've had some questions on Elliott Wave, which I don't use, okay? But one question I've been asked is, if Elliott Wave says that psychology runs the market, will this completely change the American psyche towards the stock market for the remainder of our lives and lead to a time of death and horror? Okay. And the only answer to that question I have is, first of all, I don't think so. But second of all, the real estate collapse in 2007 to 2009, if that were going to change America's psyche towards home ownership and real estate as a vehicle of investment, that would have done it. I mean, I can't think of anything else that wouldn't have done it, and it didn't do it. So I think the American psyche is going to be intact, and this is just one of those things that comes out of left field and gets you. And so that's my answer to that.
Yeah.
So I think you're going to see some people erroneously say that stocks are going to be lower in 10 years or 3 or 4 years, and they'll dump on a rally, and that's what will give us the retest.
Gotcha. Thank you, Fred, for everything you've done, man. It's helping us at least make
well,
that.
Well, knock on wood. I mean, Barrett, we'll have, yeah. when this is all over, we're going out to lunch when we're not going to give each other, you know, some weird disease. And I want to go to the
yeah.
donut shop again. But, you know, I think
yeah.
we're doing good.
Last thing, Apple, how close is it to the Fibonacci retracement that they
You know, it's a
do?
50% retracement on Apple. And one of the things that I sort of guard against with those retracements is I tend to, and Jeff Garbaza, you are free to disagree with me on this, I tend to not look at the exact 50% number. I tend to look at a number that gets you close to support, and conveniently, the 50% number, I believe, of the last run-up was around 230, 240, and I was using sort of in my head the peak in October of 2018, which was 233, 235. If Apple were to get to 240, which is fairly close to 233 to 235, you know, I would probably take some Apple at that
yeah.
point in time. Okay. You know, with this kind of volatility, it's very hard to be super precise on price levels. It just is. But that would about do it for me for Apple, and that would give us a little bit more downside, I think, in the market, which would be appropriate.
Awesome.
Hey, Fred, real quickly on Apple. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm going to give the exact levels, taking the October
sure.
low to the recent high. So
yeah.
the 38% retracement, which is really interesting. That's why I'm bringing it up. It's 255.44, and right now we're trading at 256.55, which means that the only thing we've done is retrace the 38.2%. The 50% is almost exactly your number, which is pretty awesome that you came up with that. It's 233.31, and the 61 would be 211.19, and then obviously October of 2018 low was 139.56. So those are the numbers. But, I mean, following on to Barrett, isn't the deal that only a 38% retracement, that's pretty awesome for this stock,
yeah, it
right?
is. That's definitely awesome. And, you know, Jeff, again, this reminds me of July of 1984, okay? The Dow fell from basically 1283 to 1050, okay? So you basically had a 300-point decline on a 1300 Dow, which is a fairly large percentage. When we look at that move now, we say that all the market did was pull back to the breakout. I can tell you that when you were a broker living through that, you didn't feel like all it did was pull back to the breakout and what the heck, right? You felt pretty awful. And, you know, it is normal expectation for a stock to rally and then test the breakout, which happens to be that 233, 234 area on Apple, right? And that's why I've been using it. But that's reasonably normal, but golly, it doesn't feel normal. I mean, there's nothing about this that feels normal. It's very hard. So, Jeff, I think that if 255 holds, that's great. I'm going to and I will miss it because I'm going to probably wait for 234, 235, 240, somewhere in there. We'll have to see how that goes. But Apple's, again, one of those stocks that, again, longer term, looks pretty darn good.
Thank you, Fred. Thanks,
question.
Jeff.
Sure. Yeah. Any other questions?
Hey, Fred, could you comment on T-Mobile, TMUS?
Yeah, that's been a favorite telecom for a while. And, you know, you're right on support in here. The one thing, there's two things about T-Mobile that I would just mention. I'm sure you already know them. Is, first of all, it is the subject of a corporate action. The other one is, and 74 is a support that it should not break. This 80 area support, really 84 to 74. But remember, this is a European company. This is in Germany. So they may have more of an effect on the parent company from coronavirus than we have. Right? And that might very well affect the stock a little bit more. And we tend to not remember that it's Deutsche Telekom, but it is. Other questions? Very well, going once.
Hey, Fred, just a couple more really, really quick things for you.
Sure.
So if we look at SPY and we do a similar, like a weekly retracement, and obviously we're down at pretty low levels. What's really interesting, the machines know all these levels. That's the most important thing to understand about all this stuff, and they gravitate to whatever those levels are. So the December low, if you take the December low to the high that we hit in at the beginning of May of last year, before things, like we had a bad May, remember we lost like 6%. So if you do that, if you go back and just show that retracement, what's so interesting is today we've been above and below that 61.8% retracement, which to your point, it's pretty close to your 260 number. It's 256.78. So yeah. If you're watching intraday stuff, pay attention to that number because the machines will gravitate. Like for most of our conference call, we've been above it, but we just had a little like down move and we went right back below it. But the machines know that number on SPY today, big time, 256.78. So that's my first thing. Second thing is on LQD, same thing, doing a weekly. And, you know, to your point, Fred, about retracements, the problem with retracements, it's an art, not a science. And everyone uses different levels up to a peak. And that's what the challenge is where you kind of figure it out. But on LQD, what's interesting, again, is October 2018 low, bonds started a big rally when we had that bad fourth quarter and they continued all the way up. So if you look at that retracement, 120.27 is the 61% retracement on that one.
Right.
And here we are trading at 120.56. So it's funny. The machines know all these levels and they gravitate to them. So again, that's a level to watch. And to your point, like your worst case scenario, I believe on the call was 112 on LQD. That 100% retracement is October. It's 111.46. So that is just kind of some more good info for everyone.
Yeah, Jeff, thank you for that. Because I don't use retracement that much, retracement analysis nearly as much as Jeff does. And Jeff is really good at it, for which I'm grateful because he tells me all the levels. Sure.
Yeah. No, thanks for that compliment. That's great. So one other key point is that so we've now had 5 down days for the month, and today could be the sixth, but it's not the worst month we've ever had for the number of down days in a month. I've been tracking it since like 2011, and the worst month we ever had, which is kind of an interesting point, is January of 2016. And that month, we had 9 days where we lost more than 1%. Although this is much worse because in that 9-day loss, there are only 3 days that lost between 2% and 3%, and there was nothing that was below 3%. So it is interesting that we can get those. Fred, the other thing that I've kind of noticed, which supports your point, is this idea of clustering. So January we had 2 down days that lost more than 1%. February we had 5 of them, and now in March this would be the 6th day, and so. Going back to, and again, I've only been tracking this since like 2012, but after 3 months in a row of having multiple down 1% days, it just stops on a dime. And there's like 10 observations of that from that period. It's like the market can't handle it anymore. It's almost like an earthquake. So I want you to kind of, I'll end with that. And like, can you comment on that idea of volatility can only last a certain amount of time before the market says, even I need to take a break, you know?
Right, yeah. You know, I think that the way I've always looked at it is units of three basic waves of emotion there. The first one is the professionals realize there's a problem and sell. Then retail gets the message and they sell. And then there's finally the last sellers. And, you know, I think we're close to that stage here in the next few weeks where we get that last wave of selling. And, again, the real kicker for me, Jeff, is do we close today decently? How does that go? But I think we certainly we could. And, I mean, really, honestly, I'm going to sort of shut my machine off and look at it every couple hours. I'm going to go to the chiropractor and relax. I'm going to do a couple things I have to do, and then I'll come back and look. Because I don't think – it's sort of like back in October of 2011, the intraday trading wasn't nearly as important as the end of the day.
Yep, I get that. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Hey, one other thing we probably want to put onto our report, and maybe Jack can get it out for the replay, number two, is the best website I've found for tracking the number of cases is Bloomberg does a decent job, but Johns Hopkins actually has a really great website for tracking. And just to give some like kind of comparison for stuff, there's now 127,000 cases, 4,700 deaths, which is not a crazy ratio. And to your point, Fred, Fauci about the percentage of it. He said this yesterday. The flu is basically 0.10%, so it's 10 basis points. And he said that this coronavirus is 10 times that, which means the morbidity rate is really 1%, and the Chinese have been reporting 3%. So the Chinese numbers are just off because we know they're wrong, because if you look at South Korea, who's the most – they're the standard because they put in tracking of this stuff. They're doing tests and everything else. So they've got a population. It's 51 million. Let's just call it 50 million. And so far they've had 7,800 cases, okay? So we're a population of 330 million. Let's just up it to 350. That would mean that we're going to end up with roughly 5,600 cases of it. Sorry, 56,000 cases will be what our number will be if we're anywhere close to South Korea. And if you did the same number on China, it would be a multiple of what they've reported of 80,000. So South Korea is probably the standard. And so they've had, just so everyone kind of knows, their deaths off those 7,700, it'll come up on their page. Come on. Seconds to refresh. Come on. I think it's like 60 deaths, Fred. So it's like it's an amazingly low number. So,
it's a low number
for what
that's
it's worth.
True. But there's an awful lot of fear.
Yep,
yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Well, I'll get that link over to Jack.
Please
got
do.
It.
Yeah. Any other questions? Otherwise, I've got a chiropractor appointment at 11:30, but I am around and I will respond to emails. Yesterday I was traveling. I'm sorry I didn't get back to people.
Hey, Fred, it's Rob.
Rob, how are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good.
Weather in the storm. Buying a lot of stuff today, so let's hope. CTSO, I've mentioned this to you numerous times. He just came out with an announcement that the filters are working in China. He's lobbying the government to get use here. The filters are approved in 58, 59 countries, including Germany and South Korea, where they're using them, Italy. The stock's acting great today.
What is the symbol again?
CTSO. It's thinly traded, but acting quite well, often at difficult times.
Tom, Fred Oscar?
No. Charlie, Tom, Sam, Oscar.
Charlie, Tom, Sam, Oscar. Yeah, that's trading very well, and it looks to me, Rod, like it's viable.
Yeah, okay, good. Thank you.
Got it. Other questions? Very well, going once, going twice. This will end the Fred Report technical market call for March 12th, 2020. Let's try to have a good day.